From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. An attempted invasion of Venezuela by mercenaries based in Colombia failed Sunday morning, with a number of the attackers now in the custody of Venezuelan officials. Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro said Wednesday that there was no doubt that Colombia's President Iván Duque was involved in the incursion. He also confirmed that Duque ordered the expulsion from Colombia of people involved in those terrorist acts. Maduro also released testimony from a mercenary from the U.S., Luke Denman, confirming that his group aimed at kidnapping Venezuela's president to take him to the U.S. in a plane. President Donald Trump on Tuesday denied any role in the events.
I just got information, nothing to do with our government, but I just got information on that. So we'll find out. We just heard about it. But whatever it is, we'll let you know. But it has nothing to do with our government.
But President Trump's words echo those 59 years earlier in April of 1961, when President Kennedy, 3 days before the invasion of Cuba by U.S.-backed mercenaries at the Bay of Pigs, said this.
Well, first, I want to say that there will not be, under any conditions, be an intervention in Cuba by United States Armed Forces. And this government will do everything it possibly can, and I think it can meet its responsibilities to make sure that there are no Americans involved in any actions.
For more on that, we're going to go to Managua, Nicaragua, and speak with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. So that's the way they roll here. We had President Trump denying the U.S. role, I guess, or in any event, that there were U.S. people involved in the obvious invasion attempt, failed invasion attempt, of Venezuela from Colombia that took place on Sunday. And President John Kennedy, 59 years earlier, denying about 72 hours before it happened that the U.S. planned to be involved in an invasion of Cuba.
It's like gangsterism never changes.
I know.
And the fundamental rule of the gangster is don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing.
That's right.
Right? And never sign anything. In the case of the United States, it signs something, but never with the intention of actually complying with what you've agreed to.
Right.
And so when I was startled when I saw the clips of Kennedy to realize how deeply cynical John F. Kennedy actually was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Time kind of dulls the memory. And even though I was only 10 when that happened, and it was the Bay of Pigs was a signature event, a watershed event in the region that led to practically all the subsequent history across the region. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that.
I think it's true.
And so, you know, the cynicism of JFK versus the cynicism of Donald Trump, and it's all the same. And I just remember what Robert Callahan, the sidekick to the death squad manager Nonpareil, John Negroponte, who actually cut his teeth on the Phoenix program,
right?
And that's where, that's where he met his wife in Vietnam. Anyway, and Douglas Valentine, in a recent interview with Whitney Webb, reminded people what the Phoenix program was. Much to Whitney Webb's credit, she interviewed him on that subject, and he explained to how, in his view, the Phoenix program is now being implemented more and more in the United States itself, but people don't actually realize what's happening.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so what I was referring to is that Robert Callahan, who used to be the sidekick of John Negroponte, who moved from Vietnam to Central America and then later on, much later on, to Iraq, He said in 2008, on the night of Barack Obama's election win, and he was asked by a reporter, you know, do you think that U.S. policy in Latin America will change under this future President Obama that we're going to have? And he said, of course not. United States policy has been the same for over 50 years. It's not changed over that time. It's not going to change in the future. That's what, you know, that is what a senior U.S. State Department diplomat had to say on that subject. And so, and what we've seen over the last few days in Venezuela, which, as you so rightly point out, is a kind of reprise of what happened in Playa Huaron, the Bay of Pigs, back in 1961 in Cuba. And it's just all of a piece. Nothing's changed. And so, yeah, well, if you want to get down to the nitty-gritty of what actually happened, maybe our listeners aren't entirely aware of what happened. Should we talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Let's provide some detail, because it's not really been reported very well up here.
There are a couple of good reports in Telesur. There's a better report in Spanish than in English.
Right.
But from Telesur and from a couple of other sources, what seems to have happened is that a group of mercenaries in different places tried to come ashore on the Venezuelan coast, very close to the capital, Caracas. And one of the among the mercenaries captured. So far, there's been a total of 18 people captured. 13 were captured Sunday night, early Monday morning. Another 4 were captured yesterday, I think, and another 1 today. And so it's still not clear how many of these mercenaries actually took place. And why do we call them mercenaries? Why am I calling them mercenaries? Because a guy called Jordan Goudreau, who apparently runs a mercenary corporation called Silvercorp, was interviewed by Patricia Poleo, an extreme right-wing opponent of Nicolas Maduro, who's currently in exile because she's wanted for criminal offenses in Venezuela by the Venezuelan authorities.
Yeah.
I think she's based in Colombia at the moment. And she did an interview with this guy, Jordan Goudreau, who is the apparently the owner of Silvercorp. And Goudreau produced this contract that he showed on television during this interview by Patricia Poleo. And the contract was signed by, guess who? Juan Guaido. And the contract was to organize this attempt to infiltrate into Venezuelan territory, infiltrate into Caracas. And apparently, there must be a totally harebrained scheme. They seemed to think that they'd be able to get to the Miraflores Palace, which is the residence of the head of state in Venezuela, kidnap President Maduro, get him to the airport,
right,
and fly him back to the United States under arrest.
Right.
That's the testimony of one of the U.S. mercenaries, a guy called Luke Denman. And he says that was the plan.
Right.
And there you have this interview with Patricia Poleo, this extreme right-wing opposition Venezuelan journalist, with the Jordan Goudreau. Now, who is Jordan Goudreau? Apart from being the head of Silvercorp, he has in his biography, in his resume, he seems to have, for many years, been part of the security detail looking after Donald Trump.
Right. I mean, you know, you see, they were lining up for this. In March, the Justice Department announced indictments of President Maduro, the Vice President for the Economy, the Minister of Defense, and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and charged them with drug dealing, basically. And they have indictments. So now they're carrying these down there. There's this character supposedly leading the operation. According to him, he's leading the operation. Anyway, this is Jordan Goodrow. He's the head of Silver Corp Company. And he apparently, according to Venezuelan media, had been Trump's bodyguard for many years. And that's according to President Maduro, actually.
Right.
I guess apparently he ran security for that dopey concert that they did last year in Cucuta, right. Colombia, where they had like a, Venezuelan nightmare concert to try to raise money to fund an invasion and to mask an invasion from Colombia that failed also.
Right. So. Yeah, and this is another failed attempt to mount a military provocation. And I find it impossible to believe the ostensible objective. They must have been out of their minds.
Well, these things rest. The advice, both in the case and written, is the reason that I kind of draw a parallel with the earlier attempt in Cuba at the Bay of Pigs in 1961. That was fabricated by the Dulles brothers, John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State for President Dwight Eisenhower, and his brother Alan Dulles, who was the head of the CIA, pretty much from the beginning. They had the same kind of delusional perspective on of things on the ground, events on the ground, or in any event, they were selling to the politicians that they were, getting approvals from this delusion that, all we need to do is light a match and there's going to be a conflagration that will sweep the population. There'll be a massive popular uprising against these dictators, and they will join our people in the streets, in the masses. And so that was supposed to happen when they lit the candles at the Bay of Pigs, and it didn't happen. The people, to the extent that they rose up to defend their revolution, and they've stayed mobilized 60 years since then, by the way, with these committees for the defense of the revolution, the CDRs, that are all over the country, particularly around Havana still. And also the same thing, this is Bolton and that group, Abrams, it's their belief also that all you had to do was light a match in Venezuela, and there would be a popular uprising that would sweep Maduro out because they think they've made the economy scream enough, and that didn't happen again. And there you have the Bolivarian circles. They're basically modeled on the CDRs, and people will defend their revolution against the invasion as well.
Yeah, and in fact, in some of the reports I've read, they report that the mercenaries concerned who were captured were taken aback by the fact that they were handed over by local civilians.
Yep. That's right. They have no idea what's going on. They
seem to have believed that the civilian population would welcome them, right, as you just said.
Right.
So anyway, the nitty-gritty of the attack seems to have involved two, three, maybe more launches carrying these mercenaries to Venezuela's coast from Colombian territory, right. And President Maduro and his colleagues have said that they have clear proof that these people were trained, were allowed to train in Colombia, although it has to be said that the Colombian authorities seem to have at least at one point intercepted at least part of this group, right, and sought to detain them, but they were told by the president's office, Iván Duque's office, the president of Colombia, right, to just let them go on their way.
Right.
So, and that's it. It's clear that there was some level of collusion from the very top level of Colombia's government, with Iván Duque and his circle. So they will presumably will learn more about that as the Venezuelan authorities release the information. But these groups arrived apparently in two different places, maybe three, and in each place they were detected either by local military or by local civilians. In one incident, at least one incident, the Venezuelan military engaged the mercenaries in an exchange of fire. And I understand from the reports that I've read that 8 people were killed. 8 of the mercenaries were killed.
That's what I heard also.
And they captured a whole bunch of weaponry and military accoutrements that belonged to these groups. It's possible. Who knows? We'll learn over the next couple of weeks. But it's possible that this is just a provocation designed to escalate into something greater. Or it's possible it was just a ridiculous, kind of quixotic, stupidity that will just fizzle out and there'll be nothing more to it. But if you look at it from the point of view of the United States, Don, what do you see? You see that a group of people attempted to carry out what the United States has called for, namely the capture of somebody the United States regards as a leading drugs trafficker, Nicolas Maduro, for whom they've issued a bounty of $15 million, right?
Right.
So you've got this group. So from the point of view of the United States, this intrepid group of bounty hunters,
right,
set out to catch somebody that the United States wanted caught.
Right.
Right? And who did they sign the contract with, according to Jordan Goudreau? They signed the contract with the person that the United States recognizes as the legitimate president of Venezuela.
Right, random dude.
Okay, so if you look at it from that point of view, it's perfectly possible that what may, and you remember, there are 2 United States citizens now imprisoned by the Venezuelan authorities. Now, historically, if you look at what has been the pretext for U.S. intervention across Latin America from the 19th century onwards, you know, and why did the United States send 2 battleships to intervene in the Nicaraguan Civil War in 1908, right, for example? It's because back then President Zelaya authorized the execution of 2 U.S. citizens who were caught up in an uprising against his authority.
Right.
So so that now you have a situation. What are we, 100 years on? But remember, nothing's changed.
That's right.
And so you've got 2 U.S. citizens, and what is going to be the response of the U.S. government when they say that an illegitimate government has imprisoned 2 U.S. citizens, you know, who are engaged in an attempt to legitimately take into custody somebody that we regard as a drugs trafficker for whom we've offered a bounty of $15 million?
Right, to execute on a warrant, yep. Yeah, I mean, look, and not only that. Yeah. Look even behind the optics. I mean, to a degree, that's the public relations face of this attempt. But it's really laughable. It's a cartoon, really. that stuff is all for optics. The other thing to consider is that this one of the people that they've captured. Am I understanding this right? The guy who designed this, who was Trump's bodyguard, is he in
custody? No, Goudreau has been captured.
Oh, all right. He's still Goudreau in Florida. Yeah, he's still in Miami.
He's okay. Still at large.
Yeah.
He's no mug.
Right. All right. Because, you know, if this was someone Trump had a personal relationship with, and now Maduro has a gun to his head, I thought it might become a point of, you know, something larger than just political optics. But okay. Here's something interesting. I mean, you got to look at a couple of things in American foreign policy to compare this to. You have the model of going to Iraq with the U.S. military, shock and awe, Air Force attack, take out all their defenses, and then massive U.S. military invasion. The public relations scenario, and apparently, in any event, this is what they swear to. They swore to under oath in front of Congress. You know, their belief was that when these troops arrived, they would be greeted with flowers and, you know, and all of that, instead of being fired upon like they have been since 2003 till to date. So the same, you know, the same scenario on the ground is what the U.S. intel tells them they're going to face when they come in. That there's a horribly oppressive government that is, you know, stifling the wishes of the people of the country, and all we need to do is give them a little bit of a lever, and they're going to blow the top off of that. Here, unfortunately, Saddam Hussein is such a big, bad dictator that we have to go in and pry it open ourselves. There, though, you know, the people can do it themselves with just a little support from us and light a couple of matches. But it's the same story, although you don't have people going out in the street in the United States today like we did when the Iraq War started. And I think that's part of that's something that shows that the movement of the U.S. government is constrained to a degree by the possible public response to them getting more aggressive.
Yeah, and the other thing to bear in mind is that both Russia and China, although I haven't seen an explicit statement from Russia, and Russia in general are condemning U.S. policy against Venezuela, but China specifically said over the last 24 hours, I think,
yes.
The Chinese foreign affairs spokesperson said that they will not accept, China will not accept any military aggression against, by the U.S., against Venezuela.
Or Cuba, by now, the way. They named both of them.
Right. Oh, that, well, that's great. I didn't see that.
Yep.
I just saw the remarks in relation to Venezuela.
Yep. Watch so that's, on, you know, that's serious. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, and the other, Don. The other thing about this, what you quite rightly say is a pathetic attempt to, you know, a pathetic provocation. It's somewhat bizarre.
Yeah, it is.
But the other aspect to it is that you remember that you've got the U.S. Fourth Fleet floating about in the Caribbean, just off Venezuela's coast, and people forget that they're NATO country territory, just 25 kilometers from Venezuela, and Curaçao and Aruba and Bonaire are Dutch territories. And I think both Aruba and Curaçao have important U.S. military installations on them. So just 25 kilometers, or you know, a few tens of kilometers off Venezuela's coast, you've got U.S. military installations, and at the same time, you've got the Fourth Fleet floating around in the area, supposedly,
right,
to combat drugs trafficking.
Right.
Now, what they're doing in the Caribbean to combat drugs trafficking, when over 90% of drugs leaving the region to go to the United States transit the Pacific,
right?
It's difficult to understand, and I say that, you know, using sarcasm. Of course, it's easy to understand,
right,
because the drugs pretext is ridiculous. And the reason the Fourth Fleet is patrolling the Caribbean not far from Venezuela's coast is because they're menacing and threatening Venezuela.
That's right.
So as to create a kind of a psychology of stress and fear, it's, you know, and put pressure, another kind of pressure, psychological pressure, on the Venezuelan population, who may fear, whom presumably the United States authorities are hoping that out of fear of a U.S. invasion, they will reject their government, which I think is, you know, again, it's as you reinforcing what you said earlier, it's a ridiculous misunderstanding and underestimation of Venezuelans' national pride, their desire for national sovereignty, you know, and it's another stupid miscalculation, but an extremely sadistic one.
Yeah, I mean, we have a timeline this year. Yeah, in March, the Pentagon, March 11th, the Pentagon announces that they were going to be sending more resources to Southcom. In other words, here comes some more naval ships and troops and hardware into the region, basically around Venezuela. This is, March 11th, the Voice of America carried an announcement of this, that the under the banner was Pentagon deploying more ships and forces to Latin America. About 2 weeks later, you have the announcement of the indictment coming out of the Justice Department on that was on the 26th of March, that President Maduro and 14 current and former Venezuelan officials were being charged with narco-terrorism, corruption, drug trafficking, and other criminal charges.
Which all applies very precisely to the U.S. authorities,
oh,
right?
Oh, please. I mean, come on. I mean, the only role I could see Southcom playing in the drug business down there would be to make sure that no pirates interrupt the drug shipments to the U.S. from Colombia.
Well, yeah, and what are they doing? They're protecting their drugs trafficking.
Exactly, right, exactly. So, you know, so the situation now...
Oh, no, of course, and something that we didn't mention in relation to this mercenary terrorist incident in Venezuela, one of the U.S. citizens is a DEA agent.
Okay.
Seriously.
And come on. It's...
Oh, that's true.
I mean, that's...
If you read the report, one of the people is a Drugs Enforcement Agency official.
All right, first of all, there's a federal statute called the Logan Act. It's, in essence, it criminalizes negotiation and or other intercourse by unauthorized American citizens with foreign governments that have a dispute with the United States. So I would say, from that perspective, for example, helping to organize an expeditionary force to invade and capture the president of Venezuela might be a Logan Act violation. And if you have someone who is a federal official committing that, you would think that they could put the criminal indictment in with his paycheck envelope so they'd be able to find him and prosecute him pretty quickly.
Except that, from the U.S. government point of view, he was trying to apprehend a fugitive.
Well, it doesn't seem to be a serving a warrant exemption to the Logan Act. I'm looking at the statute, and
goes to show how, and the whole thing just goes to show how completely back to front. And it's like, and I was watching Chris Hedges talking to Jimmy Dore, on a program that an interview that they did, a very interesting interview if people have a chance to look at it. But they were both explaining the complete collapse of what, you know, they regard as legitimate journalism. And I don't believe that journalism has ever existed. Yeah. And I think it's all psychological warfare at some level. Right. And what's happened now is that that psychological warfare aspect of news media has just become totally paramount.
Yep.
And it dominates everything that happens in news and information media, not just news media, but also non-governmental organizations like Amnesty International, international institutions like the UN institutions.
Art and culture also, even the theater, television, everything is, you see this playing out everywhere.
So this event, and it's like, and it's bizarre theater. But it's perfectly tailor-made for the kind of psychological warfare modality that we're all now subject to.
Yep, you're absolutely right. We're going to pick it up there next week. We're out of time. And Tony, thank you very much for your time, and we'll speak with you again next week.
You're very welcome, Don. Thanks for inviting me.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.